Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Minister Ferguson this morning said he thought it was a great time to be a minister in the energy sector, and being in the eye of the hurricane, I think it's a great time too. Keith might have mentioned, I think, that I was formerly CEO of the Sydney Futures Exchange. I did that for 15 years, and prior to that, 15 years as a futures trader, and I thought that was the fastest game in town. But as it's emerging, energy markets and energy prices are a little bit faster even than futures. Just a brief overview of the NEM and NEMCO for those that aren't particularly au fait with the design. It was created back in 1998 from the five separate state-based systems. So it's now interconnected, and it's the objective was to share energy sources, resources, and rationalise the investment across what is a very highly capital-intensive industry. Theoretically, in those days, it was the ability of South Australia to share in the greater resources that were available out of Victoria and New South Wales, and for New South Wales and Queensland to share their resources, etc. It is now the longest electricity grid in the world, and as mentioned, there's a fairly rapid demand increase on that grid. About $11 billion is traded annually. NEMCO's job in all of this is to monitor the reliability of the system, that is, the available capacity to meet demand, and that is set by standards that are agreed by the Energy Market Commission, and also to ensure that the system is secure. Simply stating, that is to make sure that in the event that a generator trips off, it doesn't give a domino effect and trip off the whole system like a bad PowerPoint might do in your home. Of course, there are contingencies where multiple events can occur at one time and will put the lights out, whether they be commercial or general public or both. And that's the time when I get calls from ministers as to what's happening. But in general, the system reliability and security to date of the NEM has been quite impeccable and a benchmark for other countries. Today what I'm going to do is go through a few of the nuts and bolts, that's what a market operator is all about, talk about the supply-demand outlook that's going to occur in the future according to the reports that we receive from intended generator investment, etc. And then I'm going to go into the price discovery mechanics, which is really a fundamental issue in talking about climate change and imposing carbon permits on the industry, and show you the dynamics of what happens when you introduce an additional cost like a carbon permit, to the short-run marginal costs of generators. And I guess get down into the nitty-gritty as to what the modellers under Garno and at Treasury are trying to work out in their assessment as to whether you have 100% auction of permits or allocations of permits and so on, and whether indeed the free market in permits is a better solution, although they've made that decision, than a tax. First off, the outlook NEM-wide. You can see the dark green block at the bottom there is now, and the blue line running up is demand. And the trick is to ensure that you have sufficient capacity to the in the columns to meet the demand. And you can see there that in 2011-12, there is a point where the projected capacity, including generation build going forward, will not meet demand. I will talk about how demand has been met to date, but I point out that there's a little bit of a perfect storm arising here, where we do have a situation in 2011 and 12 that more generation has to be built to meet the projected demand, but we also have a carbon permit scheme being introduced, which is creating uncertainty in investment. And of course, we have other issues and policies such as nuclear, which won't go away, and also give deterrence to long-term investors, and this is a long-term capital-intensive industry, to whether they meet the demand as it occurs. And of course, price is another factor, and I'll show how that clicks in as well. In recent years, the additional generation has been provided to the market just in time. Now, just to make a point here, NEMCO owns no assets at all. We are simply the market operator and do forecasts on intended generation and demand based on feedback we get from the generators and the retailers and the state authorities. The industry calls the meeting of demand at the moment a just-in-time demand. And you can see from the figures there, in 05-06 we had a total available NEM capacity, that's East Coast, of 40,127 megawatts. It grew by only 400 megawatts in 2006-07, but if you reflect back on that chart, it shows that we still met demand. In 2007-08 there was a similar figure to 06-07, and then we have a bit of a surge in 08-09 of 1,800 megawatts. So to date, and in 2009-10, we're expecting another 800 megawatts and perhaps even more. That's across the whole East Coast too. So there's investments of 900 megawatts in New South Wales, about 200 megawatts in South Australia, Victoria, and about 700 megawatts plus in Queensland going to come through over the next year or two. So that although some people may have the impression that investment isn't being made in generation in Australia to meet demand, it has been to date. The issue is really, will it do so in the future beyond 2010, and what will the investment be in? Will it continue to be in brown coal? The gut reaction to that is, well, no. Unless it's carbon capture. Will it be in gas? Depends on the price of gas. Will it be in renewables? Depends on where they are, and so on. I'd like to just pause now, and for those that do understand this, forgive me, but there's many in the industry and in government that don't. I went to a few government departments last week and showed them a couple of these slides, and furiously taking notes and gee whizzes and oh my gods and everything was coming out. So there are a few people that don't really understand how how electricity prices are discovered. This is a simple graph of what is called the bid stack, which has always confused me, because coming from the futures industry, when you want to offer something, it's an offer, whereas in the electricity industry, if you want to offer your electricity as a generator, it's a bid. They have a few other terminologies which are confusing, but that one has always gotten me. The bottom line is the lowest cost generators offering into the market. The next line up is typically the next cost, short-run marginal cost type generators, and so on. And the broken line across the top is the demand each 5 minutes. So as the demand rises, it eats into the higher price generation. And at each 5 minutes, the price is set based on the highest price. So even the generators in the yellow box get the price set at the highest price, and so on. And then when demand peaks and goes down, such as late evening, then the prices start to drift down as well. So that's how spot price is set, and it's set every 5 minutes, and all generators get the same price that's set each 5 minutes. Very sophisticated computer systems to do that. That's how it's set. Now, the dynamics of changing it are based on this next slide. The increment, the generators normally bid into the market based on their short-run marginal costs. And they do that because they've got contracts that they get paid for just running as a generator through the pool. And then there are fixed as the price goes higher than their contract price, if they've got extra capacity that isn't contracted, they get the cream, as it's called. So typically, up to date, we've had wind. Whenever it's available, whenever wind's blowing, it's automatically accepted into the system. It is not part of what we call the scheduling process. Brown coal is the next cheapest generation goes in, then black, and then gas. And those are based on the short-run marginal costs, and anything above that to the contract price is covers their fixed prices. Now, these are very rough numbers, but we've put gas in as a short-run marginal price of $40, black coal of 12 to 18, brown coal 3 to 7. The objective is to try and get rid of all those dirty brown and black coal and perhaps use more clean coal or more gas or more renewable. And so the permit scheme is, how do we do that? How do we issue those permits to invert the merit order? So we've shown a slide here where you add the cost of carbon to each one of those industries. Wind, no cost. Brown coal, that's the dirtiest. It gets the more significant cost of carbon factored into it. Black coal, slightly less, and gas, slightly less. Now, that would mean that the merit order, the amount of generation that's been accepted and running, would invert so that gas would be used more as a baseload provider of electricity than it does now in its peaking capacity. In other words, only on when the prices go up high. And brown and black coal will go further out of the merit order. That, of course, is a considerable risk to the brown coal industry and therefore to Victoria if that happens too suddenly. And Tony's mentioned concerns there as to having that happen too suddenly. But these models have a lot of factors in them that are additional to just the carbon price, which is the thing that's focusing many people's minds. But I'll just show you where a model of what happens if gas became higher up in the merit order. The big green chunk in the middle there is gas and the usage of gas going out to 2050 based on it being the second in the merit order. The others, being the dirty orangey colour down the bottom, are the coal mines, and you can see the second bottom one on the left-hand side being the brown coal. Almost, this one models it being eliminated virtually by 2020, but that could be faster according to permit costs, etc. So that model shows to the modellers that are doing all this stuff that, well, subject to a certain price for carbon, gas would become the priority use, and if there was technology that allowed gas to capture and store carbon, then even better. But who says gas is going to stay at the same price? So if you add gas price increases to the merit order, then you see the merit order change again. In actual fact, black coal now again becomes the second choice in the merit order, and therefore the best, the preferred investment for making a profit if you own a generator. And of course, what we haven't modelled into this is what if the price of coal goes up, and we're still not certain of the price of permits because we're not sure whether the permits are going to be auctioned and what the scheme is. So this is all theoretically, but giving a couple of ideas as to this is not a simple thing to do. The policy makers have got to seriously consider the long-run impact of tinkering with this and imposing prices into the industry. But with the added gas cost, this shows a projection as to what might happen if gas prices continue to increase, coal prices stay relatively unchanged. You end up with carbon storage, black coal generation being the most significant generator for electricity in the future. I think Minister Ferguson is probably looking for that result in some of the comments he was making this morning, that carbon storage and capture is the way to go. They're hoping that technology will come forward. Of course, some of the unknowns that they've got to think about is how fast does the gas price go up? Do they get the carbon permit scheme correct? does the carbon capture and storage technology actually work? Where do they put it coming out of Queensland and New South Wales? Of course, the oil fields are a hell of a long way away, and so on. So it might look simple there, but it's not so simple. And it will need certainly some very careful thought. And the summary of those issues, well, is carbon capture possible? What is the potential? What's the timing? It looks as though the government's going hell for leather on getting it up as early as possible, so cross the fingers. Gas. Not only is there an impact on increased gas usage from a price perspective, but there's got to be an infrastructure build if there is an increase in gas, because there's not enough pipeline or capacity to meet a growing demand that might occur. The extent of the gas supplies are not as long-term as coal, so if coal doesn't come forward quickly enough, gas won't save the day forever. And the impact of higher prices, as I've said before, is considerable. The potential for growth in the truly alternative sources such as wind, geothermal and so on are yet to be really fully analysed, except for wind. There's quite a lot of wind that's now emerging in South Australia as a market operator and responsible for the security of the system. I can only say that South Australia can only generate so much wind before it becomes a issue for the security and stability of the system and the inability for us to export it to another state. So they can generate as much wind as they like, but there's only so much we can use, and that's an issue. So you've got to start building wind farms somewhere else to solve those problems as they go through. And of course, all of the alternative sources, whether it be geothermal or more wind or hot rocks or whatever, means pipelines and electricity lines and the parades in the streets of people not wanting the lines to go over their milk farm and so on will start again. The remote location issue for Australia is a significant one. So the final key messages in the time that I have, the changes, it's an understatement probably to say that there are many risks in the changes to the NEM, and from our perspective as a market operator looking at reliability and security, we don't want to see too many brown coal and black coal power stations going into mothballs or winding up in completely before we're absolutely sure that we've got enough gas to replace it. And then we don't want to see too much gas come in until we're absolutely sure that we've got enough carbon capture or other sources to replace that. And certainly the whole of Australia, what doesn't want to see a government backflip in nuclear energy in 2015 or beyond because they got it wrong, because that would be a terrible investment signal to the rest of the world. There's definitely going to be changes to the merit order as this all pans out. We're already seeing higher spot market prices in electricity, and we're already seeing a contraction in forward and contract prices. That is being exacerbated by the fact that Australia has some very big players in the energy sector that are vertically integrated, and that's shrinking some of the contracting liquidity in the market. So we're moving into a regime where you have big players with a very illiquid, could be, contract market, so there will be risks that have to be incurred by other players or new entrants in that market, and at a time when we have an uncertain carbon market. I might go back into futures because that will be the fastest game in town. Of course, I've mentioned that there will have to be some observations made by modellers, et cetera, on security of the system and reliability of the system as we go forward. And that's where NEMCO will continue to do its monitoring, and that's the input we give to government through our statement of opportunities, which is a 10-year forecast, as to whether there is enough capacity being built to securely provide electricity to the standards that we've all enjoyed for the last 10 years. Thank you.
Thank you, Liz.